All right, so today we're diving deep into a Supreme Court case. Pretty landmark. Still making waves today.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Matthews v. Diaz.
Big one.
And it kind of starts with this, like, deceptively simple question.
Yeah.
Can the government, can they deny benefits to immigrants just because they haven't, you know, lived here as long as others?
Right, right.
Like, it seems straightforward, but it gets really complicated.
Well, I think what Matthews v. Diaz does so well is it forces us to look at this tension, right? You have immigration law, and you're trying to balance the government's need to control immigration with this idea of equal treatment under the law.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And this case really brings it to life, you know, like through the stories of the people involved.
Absolutely.
So we have Diaz, Clara, and Espinosa.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all lawful permanent residents.
Right.
All over 65.
Yep.
And they were denied coverage under Medicare Part B.
Medicare, yeah.
Because they hadn't lived in the U.S. for 5 continuous years.
5 years. That was the magic number.
And that rule, like that 5-year rule, went straight to the Supreme Court.
Straight to the top, which tells you a lot right there.
Yeah. What does that tell you?
Well, the stakes were high, right? This wasn't just about those 3 individuals.
Right.
This decision could affect so many immigrants, their access to these federal benefits.
Yeah, and so let's kind of break down the arguments a little bit here.
Okay.
You have Diaz, Clara, and Espinosa. They're saying, hey, this is discrimination. You can't deny us these benefits just based on how long we've been here.
Right. Basic fairness argument.
So what was the government's response to that? What was their counter?
Well, they basically said, look, we have broad power to decide, you know, who gets benefits, especially when it comes to immigration.
Mm-hmm.
We have to protect taxpayer money, right? And manage how many people are coming in.
Okay.
And Congress, they have the power to make different rules for immigrants than for citizens.
So we're getting into this murky water of federal power versus like individual rights. What did the Supreme Court, what do they say?
They sided with the government.
Oh, wow.
And that decision, that's what we're still dealing with today.
So they really set a precedent here.
Absolutely. They said Congress, they can make rules for immigrants that wouldn't be okay for citizens.
Hold on. So they're saying the government can treat immigrants differently.
That's right.
How is that even constitutional?
Well, it comes down to this thing called the rational basis test.
Okay, I've heard of that. Break that down for me.
All right, so think of it this way. The court is basically asking, does this law, does it make any sense? Like, at all, even if it's not perfect.
So it's a pretty low bar.
It's a pretty low bar to clear, yeah.
Okay.
All the government has to show is, like, a reasonable connection between the law and some kind of legitimate goal.
So they can just, like, come up with some reason, even if it's flimsy, and it'll, like, pass the test.
Yeah, pretty much.
Doesn't that give them the ton of leeway?
Oh, it does. It definitely does.
Okay.
And that's where it gets interesting. The court recognized that, you know, the government has a lot of power when it comes to immigration.
Yeah.
But it also brings up this constant struggle, right, to protect immigrants from unfair treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this push and pull.
It is. And it's something we're still dealing with, you know, like how do we balance these things?
Big questions. But let's rewind for a second.
Okay.
What were these rational reasons why this 5-year rule? Like, what was the government's logic there?
So basically, they said, look, we got to protect Medicare, make sure it's financially stable.
Okay, so protect the system.
And we have to make sure the people getting benefits, they've, you know, established themselves here.
Like put down roots.
Yeah, shown they're committed to being in the U.S.
Okay, that makes sense on the surface. But how did the court, how do they square this with other cases where they've, you know, been tougher on discrimination against immigrants?
Right. Well, they kind of drew this line between federal power and state power.
Okay.
They said the federal government, they have this unique role when it comes to immigration.
Like, okay. It's a national thing.
Right.
It affects our relationships with other countries. It's about, you know, national sovereignty. So Congress, they get more leeway in this area.
So because it's the feds calling the shots on immigration, they get more wiggle room.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
And here's something that I think really highlights that. There were no dissenting opinions in this case.
Wait, really?
All the Supreme Court justices, they agreed.
Wow.
Which, that almost never happens.
Especially on something this big.
Exactly. So it just shows you how much weight they gave to the government's authority over immigration.
So it's like, okay, Congress has power, but did they just kind of take the government's reasoning at face value?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
Remember, the court wasn't saying the 5-year rule was perfect.
Right.
They just said it wasn't irrational enough, it wasn't discriminatory enough to be unconstitutional.
So they didn't necessarily love it, but it met that rational basis threshold, the low bar.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I see. Even if people thought it was unfair, the court wasn't going to step in and second-guess Congress.
Right, as long as there was some sort of justification.
Exactly.
So, okay, we've talked about this case a lot, but is this just a history lesson? Like, is this relevant today?
Oh, it's totally relevant. Matthews v. Diaz. This case basically created a precedent that still impacts how immigration policy is shaped today.
Oh, wow.
Congress can create all these different tiers of eligibility for immigrants, for all sorts of federal benefits.
So it's not just about Medicare.
Nope, it goes way beyond that.
Okay, so this case has had some serious ripple effects.
Absolutely. It set the stage for how the government can treat immigrants differently. And that's why Matthews v. Diaz is so crucial to understanding immigration law today.
Yeah, okay, so we've covered a lot here, starting with the stories of Diaz, Clara, and Espinosa, getting into constitutional law, and now we're talking about modern immigration policy.
We've gone deep.
Yeah, we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, there's so much more to unpack.
We've got a lot more to talk about with this case. We'll get into all that after a short break.
Sounds good.
So stick with us.
Stay tuned.
Okay, so we're back and we're digging deeper into Matthews v. Diaz. And I want to talk about the reasoning, like the legal logic behind it.
Yeah, the foundation of the case.
It's fascinating, I think, how the court really made this sharp distinction between like the federal government's power versus the state's power when it comes to, setting rules for immigrants.
Yeah, that's a key takeaway.
They kept emphasizing that the federal government had more leeway.
Right, more freedom to maneuver.
And I remember thinking, why? Why is that? Why does the federal government get to play by different rules when it comes to immigration?
It all boils down to the Constitution.
Okay, back to the basics.
Yeah, the core of our system,
Yeah.
right? And the Constitution, it lays out these specific powers for the federal government.
Right.
And guess what? Immigration, it's one of them.
It's right there in black and white.
It's a big deal. It affects our relationships with other countries, national sovereignty, all that.
So basically, because the Constitution gives the federal government this power over immigration, they get to call the shots.
In a nutshell, yes.
It still feels like a lot of power for one branch of government, you know?
It is a significant amount of power. You're not wrong.
Okay, so that's where that rational basis test that we talked about earlier comes in.
Exactly. That's the safeguard.
Right. It prevents things from getting too crazy.
It's the check on that power.
So remind me again, in this context, what does rational basis actually mean?
Okay, so simple terms. The rational basis test means the government's rule, in this case, that 5-year residency for Medicare, it doesn't have to be the absolute best way to achieve its goals.
Like, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Nope, not at all. It just needs to have some logical connection, even a small one, to a legitimate goal the government has.
So as long as they can come up with some reason, it's good.
Pretty much, yeah, the bar's not very high.
And the burden of proof, it's on the person challenging the law, right?
Right. They have to prove there's no rational basis at all.
Wow. Okay, so back to Matthews. The government said the 5-year rule was about like fiscal responsibility, making sure people had put down roots.
Right. Protecting the system, ensuring commitment.
Did the court really buy that? Like, it seems like a pretty flimsy argument.
Well, the court didn't really dive deep into scrutinizing the government's logic.
So they didn't overthink it.
No, they accepted that those were legitimate interests and that the 5-year rule was, at least somewhat related to those interests.
Okay, so it met the low bar.
It did, yeah.
But couldn't you argue that there are other ways, like less restrictive ways, to achieve those same goals without, potentially discriminating against immigrants?
You absolutely could, and that's often the big debate in these types of cases.
Right, finding that balance.
But remember, with the rational basis test, the court's not supposed to get too involved.
They're hands off.
They're not going to substitute their judgment for what Congress decided.
So even if they thought there was a better way, a fairer way, they weren't going to like micromanage Congress.
That's right. They were basically deferring to the expertise of the legislative branch.
Okay, but this whole deference thing, it feels like a slippery slope, doesn't it?
It does. It raises a lot of questions.
Like, how much power is too much power? When does judicial restraint become like giving up their responsibility? Where's the line?
That's the million-dollar question. And legal scholars, advocates, they're still debating it.
The big one.
Matthews v. Diaz really sparked this huge debate about how much deference courts should give to the government when it comes to immigration.
Especially when you're trying to balance government power with protecting the rights of immigrants.
Exactly. It's a complex issue.
So we've established Matthews is important, but I want to, like, bring it back down to earth.
Yeah, let's get practical.
How does this actually play out in the real world? Like, how does this affect the daily lives of immigrants?
That's a crucial question. And the answer is, it means immigrants might face different rules, different eligibility for a whole range of federal benefits, from healthcare to housing assistance to education.
So it's not just Medicare anymore.
No, it's way bigger than that.
This case has a wide reach.
The principle for Matthews that Congress can create different rules for immigrants, even if they seem unfair, it's been applied in so many different areas.
So for immigrants who are, you know, trying to navigate this complex U.S. system.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming.
Understanding Matthews v. Diaz is super important.
Absolutely. It helps explain why certain benefits might be harder to get, why there are extra obstacles.
Like, it's the key to unlocking this whole part of the system.
It also shows how important advocacy is and challenging laws that are unjust.
Right. Fighting for your rights.
It's about knowledge and action.
So it's like this one case, Matthews v. Diaz, has all these tentacles reaching out and influencing the lives of immigrants.
It's a powerful case with a lasting impact.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk about the lawyers listening to this.
Yeah, the legal professionals.
What are the key takeaways for them? What do attorneys and law students who work with immigrants, what do they need to know about Matthews to really represent their clients effectively?
The first thing is they need to understand that rational basis test inside and out.
Okay, knowing the ins and outs.
Because when they're challenging a federal law that treats immigrants differently.
Right, that seems unfair.
They have to prove with strong evidence and arguments that there's absolutely no rational basis for it.
That sounds hard to do.
It can be tough, for sure.
Okay.
But it's not impossible.
So there's still hope.
Oh, yeah. There have been cases where courts have struck down immigration laws that were just too arbitrary, too discriminatory, even under the rational basis test.
So it can be done.
It takes a smart legal strategy, a deep understanding of the law, and a willingness to really push the boundaries.
Okay. Besides the rational basis test, what else should lawyers keep in mind when they're working on cases like this, you know, cases involving immigration and benefits?
They have to be aware of the difference between federal power and state power.
Okay, yeah, we talked about that.
Matthews made it clear. The feds have more leeway with immigration rules than individual states do.
So knowing who's responsible for the law is crucial.
It's a game changer. It affects how you argue the case, which battles you choose to fight.
Can you give us a real-world example? Like, how would Matthews v. Diaz come up in a real case?
Sure. Imagine a lawyer is representing an immigrant who's been denied housing assistance, a federal subsidy, because of their immigration status.
Okay, a common scenario.
The lawyer has to look closely at the law, see if it treats immigrants differently, and then, using Matthews as a guide, figure out if there's a rational basis for that difference.
So they're using Matthews as a roadmap.
Exactly. Looking for that legitimate government interest, some plausible reason for the different treatment.
Okay, Polly.
And they have to consider if there are other ways to achieve that goal without discriminating.
That's where the lawyer skills come in.
Right. Creativity, analysis, thinking outside the box.
So knowing case law, knowing the precedents, it's essential.
Absolutely. Citing cases like Matthews can make your argument stronger, more persuasive.
It's like having the right tools for the job.
It's not just about knowing the law. It's about knowing the stories behind it, the cases that shaped it, and how to use them to fight for your clients.
It's about using the law to tell a story.
And those stories can be incredibly powerful in the fight for justice and equality.
Okay, so we've gone deep into Matthews v. Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the history, the reasoning, the impact on immigrants' lives.
We've covered a lot of ground.
But before we wrap up, I want to leave everyone with something to think about.
A little food for thought.
What if the residency requirement at Matthews wasn't 5 years, but 10 or 15? Would the court have ruled the same way? Would that be too much?
That's a great question. It gets to the core of this whole debate about a deference to the government in immigration cases.
It makes you think about where the line is between a reasonable rule and discrimination.
And who gets to decide where that line is?
Yeah. Is it the courts? Congress?
Yeah.
The people? Big question.
Matthews v. Diaz gives us a framework for thinking about these issues, for having these tough conversations about immigration and equality.
So it's more than just a case, it's a starting point.
It's a lens through which we can view these complex issues.
This has been an amazing deep dive into Matthews v. Diaz. We've talked about Medicare, constitutional law, power dynamics, the works.
It's been a fascinating journey.
But we're not done yet.
Oh, no. We've got more to discuss.
We'll be back after a short break to continue our exploration.
Stay tuned.
All right. So we're back, and we've been dissecting Matthews v. Diaz this whole time. But now I kind of want to zoom out, look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, step back a bit.
You know, it's more than just Medicare and immigration in the 70s, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think what Matthews really highlights is this idea of, like, power dynamics.
Power dynamics, okay.
The power the federal government has, how much the courts get involved, and then this constant fight for equal rights, especially in a country built on immigration.
Yeah, it's about those big questions that are always, like, lurking beneath the surface of our legal system.
Exactly. And I think one trend that Matthews really exemplifies is this thing called legal pragmatism.
Okay. Legal pragmatism. Haven't heard that one before.
It's basically saying, hey, let's focus on the real world consequences of legal decisions.
Okay. So less about like the theory, more about the actual impact.
Right. Less about sticking to rigid doctrines, more about what's going to happen in people's lives.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And Matthews is a great example of that. The court was like, look, immigration policy is messy. It's complicated. We need to be flexible. And Congress, they have the expertise here, so we're going to defer to them.
Okay, but doesn't that deference thing, doesn't that give the government a ton of power? Especially with something like immigration, which is so politically charged these days.
That's the tension, right? The heart of Matthews and, honestly, the heart of our whole system of government.
Mm-hmm. That push and pull.
It's like this constant balancing act. Individual rights versus government power. Judicial review versus what Congress decides.
Yeah, it's always shifting, always evolving.
It's this dynamic thing we're always figuring out as a society.
So Matthews v. Diaz, it wasn't just about some Medicare rule. It was about these huge questions about, like, how our democracy works, how power is shared, how we protect individual rights.
It gets to the core of it all.
And these questions, they're not just history. They're still relevant today.
Even more so now, I'd say, with immigration being such a hot-button issue.
It's impossible to ignore the political climate. When we talk about a case like Matthews, immigration just sparks so much debate, so much division.
And that's exactly why understanding cases like Matthews is crucial. It gives us the tools to have these tough conversations.
Legal and historical context.
Yeah, it helps us be more objective, see past the rhetoric, and really grapple with the law.
I'm starting to see how it all connects. Matthews v. Diaz isn't just a case. It's a way to understand how immigration law has changed. The precedents, the fight for equality.
It's like a thread through history.
It's not about finding easy answers. It's about asking the right questions, having those nuanced conversations.
Being informed, engaged, and ready to advocate for what's right.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you want listeners to take away from Matthews v. Diaz? What's its lasting legacy?
For me, it's that Matthews was a turning point. It signaled this shift towards more deference to the federal government on immigration. And that has had a huge impact on how things have played out legally ever since.
So it's not just a case. It's a turning point, a ripple effect on the law and on how we think about immigration.
And the fact that we're still talking about it, debating it almost 50 years later shows how important it is.
It's a testament to its impact, for
sure. Yeah, it's not going away anytime soon.
Well, this has been an incredible journey exploring Matthews v. Diaz. We've talked about everything from Medicare to power dynamics to the future of immigration law.
It's been a pleasure really digging deep into this case with you.
And to our listeners, keep exploring. Read the full opinion in Matthews v. Diaz. Look up the cases that cite it. Think about what it means for your communities and the fight for immigrant rights.
Stay curious, stay informed, and keep those conversations going.
This has been The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us on this exploration of Matthews v. Diaz.